Unleashed, Episode 9, TV Shows of the 80s, The Snowball Grows, Part 2. And I'm your host, Jerry Lake, the Unleashed Baby Boomer, and welcome back to another segment of B Boomer Unleashed. If you'll remember, we've been discussing TV current events and other media types of the 50s forward and how our choices have diminished in character and values to where we are today. And we're going to pick up there where we left off last week. Let me remind you first where you can always find our podcast. You can find us on bboomerunleashed.podbean.com. You can find us on Facebook, iTunes, Spotify, Tumblr, Instagram, and Google Play at bboomerunleashed. You can also find us on Twitter at bboomerunleash1. And you can always drop us an email. We'd love to hear from you at bboomerunleashed@gmail.com. All one word, bboomerunleashed@gmail.com. Now, last week we promised that we would be talking about cable and satellite on this week's installment of Be Boomer Unleashed. But before we do that, let's talk a bit about home video first, which came along about the same time. If you'll remember, those of you who are old enough to remember, in the late 70s and early 80s, home video became available at affordable prices. People could bring the video home with them. You remember the old VHS players? That stands for Video Home System. And Betamax? Some of you old enough to remember Betamax out there? Well, those were the first entries into the magnetic tape market. And there was quite a format war at the time. VHS eventually won out. But now Betamax was introduced in the United States. Both of these technologies were invented in Japan, but Betamax was first introduced in 1975 in the United States, and then VHS was introduced in 1977. And there was quite a format war. For a while there, you could get movies either in Betamax, which was a little bit smaller tape than the VHS tape, or you could get them in VHS, which was a larger format tape. And there was quite the war. There were machines for Betamax tapes. There were machines for VHF, and never the twain would mix. They were not compatible with each other's machines. So obviously, we knew that there was going to be some kind of a war between those two, and who finally came out victorious, we weren't sure. But eventually, VHS came out on top, and Betamax hit the bricks. There was also some technology that was introduced along about 1978, and some of you may remember these. It was called the laser disc. The laser disc. And it was kind of like today's DVD, only it was about the size of a 33 and a third RPM LP album. It was a huge thing. And those didn't last long because they were very expensive to purchase. The selection of movies wasn't very great on the, they were just too big, they were too expensive. Not enough people putting their content on those discs, so they didn't last very long. The machines to play them on were pretty expensive too. So the laser disc, it came and it went, and VHS finally prevailed, and it became the standard in home video. I remember early on, we purchased a video camcorder. It was actually a video recorder, and then you had a camera to plug into the thing, and you put the recorder on a strap and carried it over your shoulder, and you had a video camera that plugged into that recorder that was about the size of something they would use at CBS or NBC. It was a very large, cumbersome thing, and then you had a separate TV tuner unit that sat on the counter with this thing when you wanted to play back. That was the introduction of camcorders or video recorders. Then they later came out with the actual camcorders, which was a camera and a video recorder all tied into one unit there. But early on, you had a recorder and you had a camera that you carried it over your shoulder, and it was quite a cumbersome thing. That was the entry to home entertainment on VHS, and people just went crazy over it. You remember Blockbuster Video? Remember Blockbuster? And there were a lot of other stores that were a lot like Blockbuster. They came by different names, but Blockbuster was the biggie. At its peak in 2004, Blockbuster had 9,000 stores nationwide. Imagine that, 9,000 Blockbuster stores where you could walk in and for a few dollars rent a video that you could take home with you and play on your VHS machine. And everybody thought that was just a wonderful thing, and it was. It was quite a piece of entertainment technology that was introduced there by Blockbuster. Do you know how many Blockbuster stores there are today? Right here as we sit here today, there's one. In Bend, Oregon. There were a few more just last year, but most of those were in Alaska because of the very poor cable reception and TV reception in Alaska. The Blockbuster stores were still popular there, but they finally closed down last year, and there's one left in Bend, Oregon. So if you want to see a Blockbuster store, if your kids have never seen a Blockbuster store, or some of your the folks listening have never seen a Blockbuster store, then trot on out to Bend, Oregon, and you can see the one remaining Blockbuster store. Then in 1997, that just doesn't seem too long ago for me, 1997. Of course, it's about 22 years ago, I guess, when you stop to think about it. But in 1997, the DVD was introduced. And that little disc, a friend of mine used to call them little records. Little records, he would call them. But the DVD was just a fraction of the size of a VHS. You know, you had several VHS tapes laying around, and it took up a whole lot of room. But the DVDs didn't take up much room. And the beauty of the DVD was rewinding or going back to a spot in the video and being able to play forward. And the picture quality was not as degraded on a DVD as it was on a VHS. DVD took over the market, and by about 2008, 10 or 11 years ago, the VHS was a thing of the past. Now, a lot of people still have VHS players in their home. I know I still have one. It's kind of an antique. Probably end up in the Smithsonian Institute one day. But we have still some of the old VHS tapes, and every once in a while we'll get it out and watch it. But the DVDs just took that over by storm. And, of course, the DVDs, you used to be able to rent those in the Blockbuster store, too. But not anymore. The Blockbuster store is gone. If you want a DVD, I guess Redbox is about one of the only options you have. I think Netflix has an option where you can rent DVDs through the mail, and there are probably other outlets as well. But the DVD pretty well displaced the VHS by about 2008. But let's talk about this whole phenomenon of home video and why it really came into its own in the 70s and 80s, the late 70s and early 80s. And we haven't even got into cable TV or satellite TV yet. Let's just talk about videos. And why was it a big deal? Well, the big deal was is you had such limited TV programming. You had basically the three major networks, NBC, CBS, and ABC. And if there wasn't anything on those three networks that you wanted to watch, then you were just pretty well up the creek without a paddle that you had nothing to watch. So the home entertainment industry was just ripe for the picking. And so Fridays and Saturday nights, instead of becoming nights where you would sit at home and watch television reruns, and believe it or not, a lot of those reruns took place on the weekends. Wasn't a whole lot of original programming on the weekends, except for sporting events. So if you didn't want to watch the tennis match or the golf match or the football game, you were pretty much out of luck. So the home entertainment business, the ability to get movies on DVD and VHS and play them right in the comfort of your own home. And unlike the movie theater where you needed to get up and get some popcorn or go to the bathroom in the middle of the movie and you missed 10 minutes of the movie doing that, at home, guess what? All you had to do was push pause and then go get your soft drink or your popcorn or go to the bathroom, whatever it was you needed to do. And then you come back and push play again, and it's very convenient there in the comfort of your own home. Now, early on, people say, well, it's just not the same watching it on the big screen and watching it on your TV at home. Well, it wasn't then, but that was before the big screen TVs. And then they came out with the projection TVs, where you had a TV about the size of a Volkswagen sitting in the corner there that had a projector in it that projected the picture up on the screen. And then they came out finally with the flat panels. And so you have a large theater type experience at home, and you even have surround sound and everything else. So really, you don't miss anything at home. So the home entertainment business started to flourish there in the 1980s, late 70s and early 80s. And Friday nights became movie nights at home instead of, like say, watching reruns on TV or going to the theater. We also mentioned, you say, well, why? Why was this so popular? You remember we mentioned last week that in the 80s, we talked about all the current events that took place there and the TV program. Remember we talked, a lot of the programming was what I refer to as mindless television. The plots were really kind of weak. It wasn't really that entertaining when you think back of the shows that we had in the 1980s as opposed to what we had in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, where you actually had some thought going into the plot. And, you know, a lot of that is even got worse as the time has gone on. We'll talk more about that next week. You remember that was a decade of mindless television. There wasn't a whole lot of entertainment on TV in the decade of the 80s. So that was a market, like I said, just ripe for the picking, in that people were looking for other types of entertainment. Now, what else was the attraction of home entertainment? VHS tapes and DVDs and those types of instruments. What else was the attraction there? Well, there was no censorship. No censorship. Say that three times real fast. You could get everything on VHS or DVD, everything from My Little Pony to hardcore pornography. And you could bring that right into the comfort of your own home. And so people who were wanting more and more sexual content and violent content that they weren't getting on the major networks, they were able to turn to home entertainment. So that's when we started inviting this nasty stuff into our homes with the foul language and the violence and the sexual activity. And that was all invited into the American homes in the late 70s and 80s through home entertainment, VHS and DVD. So there was no censorship. And everything, like I said, from My Little Pony right up to hardcore pornography, you could go right down to Blockbuster or some seedy little back room where you could rent porn flicks, and you could get those and bring them home and watch those in the privacy of your own home. Then we have enter cable and satellite TV. Remember we said, first of all, that cable TV, or CATV, which is short for Community Antenna Television. A community shared a mega antenna to draw in weak signals, but you were still stuck with network programming. You know, you had a big antenna up on a mountainside somewhere, and you hooked onto a cable, the Community Antenna Television, and you were able to get that signal, but guess what? You were still stuck, NBC, CBS, and ABC, and whatever was on those channels you could watch, but that was pretty much it. There wasn't a whole lot of local programming except for a few local access channels that you might have on there, where somebody might have a swap shop or they might have a school concert or something. You might be able to watch something like that on local access TV. But as far as any programming that was above and beyond what was on the three major networks, you were very limited on those early cable TV stations. Then along about 1976 comes Ted Turner's Superstation. Remember the Superstation? And the big three, once Ted Turner came on the scene, was in a fight for their lives. They were in a literal fight for their lives because Ted Turner's Superstation introduced the world to programming that was not dependent upon NBC, ABC, or CBS. So Ted Turner's Superstation there in Atlanta, Georgia, has morphed into, or if you would prefer, evolved into, hundreds, literally hundreds of cable networks since those meager beginnings. Now there's a channel for nearly every interest that anyone might have. Some examples, and certainly this is not an all-inclusive list. If you'd like to look at the list of cable networks in this country, just go online to Wikipedia and type in cable networks. And there are pages and pages of cable networks dedicated to all kinds of different interests out there. Some examples would be like the news networks, you know, Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, all of these different news networks. And then there's variations of those networks within the network. So there's all different kinds of news networks. There are networks like Home and Garden TV, where you can sit and watch people look at houses all day or remodel houses. National Geographic, The Golf Channel, ESPN, History, HBO, Showtime, Gun TV, The Fishing Channel, The Dance Channel, MTV, etc., etc., etc. Do you realize there are over 95 million pay TV subscribers in the United States today? Over 95 million. Now, that's a big number. 95 million pay TV subscribers in the United States today. There are about 409 cable providers, those cable companies that take your money every month. Then satellite got into the game in the late 70s. At first, satellite were these huge, humongous satellite dishes about the size of an Oldsmobile or a Buick. And they cost a lot of money. They were about $10,000. Here in West Virginia, we used to tease about it. You'd go up some hollow somewhere, and here would be a little old dilapidated shanty with a new four-wheel drive truck and a satellite dish in the front yard. And the satellite dish, nobody ever hid them in the backyard. They wanted them right out front where everybody could see them because it was kind of a status symbol if you had this giant satellite dish in your yard to the tune of about $10,000. But then, later on, they got about the size of a briefcase, and some of them are even smaller than that today, and you primarily have DirecTV and Dish Network, these channels providing cable service with hundreds and hundreds of channels that are available for a monthly subscription fee. So what are the dangers? What are the dangers of all of this hundreds of channels coming into the home? Well, first of all, and this is just kind of a simple example. Let's say that you had new neighbors that came into town, and I've used this example before. I'm not sure if it's on this podcast, but I've used it for the Sunday school class and other places from time to time. But let's say that you had new neighbors that moved into the neighborhood, and you're at home one night, and a knock comes on the door, and you invite the neighbors in to come and drink coffee and maybe have a cookie or something and get acquainted. So they come in and they're sitting there on the couch and your children are sitting in the floor playing, little Johnny and Susie and Kimmy Joe, and all of them are sitting there in the floor playing. You go in to get the coffee and the cookies and you come back in and your new neighbors are naked on the couch having sex there in front of your children. Now, what do you do? Of course, you run them off with a big baseball bat or something, tell them to get out and never come back. Yet, we will pay good money each and every month to invite total strangers into our living room and have hundreds and thousands of sex acts during the course of a year in front of our children. We will invite violent acts into our living room. Not only invite it, but pay for it to happen in our living rooms in front of our children. You say, well, I have control over that. I have control over TV. Well, that's good if you do, but guess what? You can't watch your children each and every day. for each and every minute. And a lot of kids have TVs in their room, and that's the reason I suggest that you don't have television sets or computers in your children's room. It's just too easy to access this kind of material, and it's very dangerous for this unsupervised watching of television because you have so many ways that it can go wrong. There are all kinds of programs, HBO and Cinemax and Showtime and all these things that have these R-rated pornographic movies that are right there for your children to watch. And you pay good money each and every month to invite them in. So it's a danger. And so what happened in the 80s, the age of mindless television, people wanted something else to watch. And so they invited these cable and satellite companies into their home at big bucks to bring these sex acts and this graphic violence into the home. The snowball grows, folks, and it continues to grow. Now, next week, we'll talk about the 90s and the 2000s and where we're going in terms of media, and we're also going to include video games and streaming video in that conversation. Then, we'll turn our attention to some alternatives to this cable and satellite to help you save money on your entertainment bill. Wouldn't you like to save about $150 a month? Well, we'll tell you how to do that next week. And some suggestions that we have on keeping your children and your grandchildren safe. You might be interested in those. And then finally, we'll discuss the phenomenon of school violence and what part, if any, the entertainment industry has played and how to address some of these very, very serious problems. And that'll be over the next few weeks that we'll do that. And then we'll finish up this discussion on media and we'll move on to something else, hopefully of interest to you. Well, that's all the time that we have for this episode. But I certainly hope you'll tune in next week. And for every episode, for that matter, of Bee Boomer Unleashed, we certainly enjoy talking with you on this podcast. So have a great week and God bless each and every one of you. Goodbye.